Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
I got an alert from NOLA Ready yesterday evening saying dense fog advisory issued until 9 a.m. by the National Weather Service. And as a result of that, I guess, of the fog, there's a rolling convoy southbound, one lane on the causeway northbound. You're restricted to one lane at 35 miles an hour. So other than the dense fog advisory that's in effect until 9 o'clock, cloudy, highs today of 74. Chance for showers tomorrow, but that's primarily early, as I understand it. Highs of 70 tomorrow after the front comes through. Then looking at Super Bowl week, highs of 65 Saturday, 70 on Sunday, 71 Monday, nothing but sunshine, 70 on Tuesday, some clouds roll in. 40% chance for showers on Wednesday, highs of 72, then 77 and 78 for a high on Thursday and Friday. And let's hope we have Chamber of Commerce weather for the entire nation to see and get them ready to come down and visit New Orleans. Patrick Penfield joins us now, professor of supply chain management at Syracuse University. Morning, Patrick. How are you?
Good, Tommy. Good morning to you, too.
Last time we spoke to you was after the Baltimore Bridge disaster, and now they got that crash at Reagan. Not at Reagan, I shouldn't say that. And the Potomac flight heading into Reagan International and not Dulles. I presume you've flown into that airport a lot?
Yeah, I have, and that's just a horrific accident. So you hate to hear about things like that, but seems to be an uptick in those types of situations that have been happening recently.
Have you seen a lot of Black Hawk helicopters? Because I'm seeing things on the internet of people on Twitter, rather, of them posting videos of seeing the helicopters as their planes landing and so forth. I know that is probably the most secure airspace in the country, given the, and again, we're not talking about Dulles, we're talking about Reagan, which is right there by everything in D.C. And it would seem an odd place to have training missions, but do you know anything about that?
No, I don't, Tommy. I think it's probably maybe due to the president and maybe some of the things that are going on in Washington these days.
I see. Perhaps that has something to do with it. Let's talk about egg prices and supply chain. What is the deal with the price of eggs, and how do you get an average price? Because somebody texted in said, I didn't find the eggs are that bad. Our price of eggs are that found the price of eggs are that bad. Walmart has them for $4.20 a dozen. Now, I guess eggs aren't just eggs, and you can go from small to extra large to brown to organic and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, Tommy, you're absolutely correct. So there's, different sizes, different variations. And so, again, some of your listeners may not be seeing that huge price increase. But if they were to live in California, you're talking on average over $9 a dozen.
Wow.
And some of that has to do with some of the regulations and the cage-free egg laws that they have out there.
So I always thought the chicken should get paid extra for extra large eggs. That's just me, Patrick, the way I look at it, because, we're involved in the purchase of eggs. The chicken, they're committed in the laying of eggs, right? But let's talk about the overall outlook for bird flu and chickens and farmers and regulations and grocery prices also in general, because I know President Trump, force of habit, said that he was going to lower grocery prices. And I think it's one thing to stop prices from going up, but to lower them is another thing. Exactly. Talk about the whole grocery price thing and supply chain and how rapidly something like that goes up or down, please.
Sure. So, Tommy, it's all about supply and demand, right? And so most of your listeners know this, is that, the more demand you have, less supply, prices go up. And so that's kind of what's happening within the egg supply chain. So the big issue is the avian flu. And so what we're seeing, it's decimating flocks. So you have one hen that gets detected with avian flu, you have to cull the whole flock. And so it's very concerning. And the CDC actually has some information on their website. And I'm shocked at how many flocks have been killed in just the month of January, just due to avian flu detection. So what happens, Tommy, is when you go ahead and you cull a whole flock, you know, that an egg producer has, then they got to, you know, replenish, right? And it takes 5 months, 5 to 6 months before a hen can actually lay an egg. So if you think about this, Tommy, you know, if you're going ahead and just, again, culling these flocks, you're going to have less supply. And, you know, unfortunately, demand does go up in, you know, the past holidays, right? So that causes it. You know, winter months, usually people are eating more inside. And so, again, you're just seeing this uptick in demand. And unfortunately, the supply is just not keeping up. So this is really a horrific situation. The USDA in the beginning of January had predicted a 3% increase in prices. Then they later changed it to 11%. Then I did some analysis, and I said, it's got to be above 20%. And then recently, the USDA just changed their numbers to 20% also. So, yeah, I expect, again, with your listeners, they may not see that locally just because different areas are being impacted differently. So some of the large egg producers are getting hit pretty hard. I'm just shocked at just looking at a egg producer and having to kill over 3 million hens. And I just recently saw this in the website. So it seems like there's an uptick of the avian flu in January, so which is very concerning.
I saw a movie over the weekend. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Rams. Have you ever seen it?
I have not, Tommy.
It's about a couple of Australian sheep farmers, and the herd is detected with some kind of disease, and they have to wipe out the entire herd and then sanitize the building. And I thought about the whole egg situation and the avian flu through that prism, and not to give anything away, but the guy keeps a couple of sheep and lets them loose and all that stuff, but it keeps them in his house and covers it up with air freshener. And, you know, that kind of begged my, because if you keep a couple of sheep in the house, I think people are going to know it. That's not the point. The point is when a farmer is faced with, as you said, culling, basically he's killing every hen that he has, right? They have to what, go in and decontaminate the place after the bird flu?
Yeah, absolutely, Tommy. So, you know, this is really kind of a sad situation. So, again, you know, they have to take biosecurity measures. So, you know, and this is really kind of gets really perplexing. So these cage-free egg laws, and this is where, you know, you don't have these hens in cages, you know, they actually can go ahead and, you know, they have free reign. In some places, it's a lot of free reign. In other places, it's not. So the bird flu is spread through geese, gooses, aquatic, you know, wild birds. And so it doesn't take much. And so the geese and the goose, they seem to have somewhat of immunity towards the bird flu, but the hens do not. You know, it can, one hen, once it actually gets infected, can die instantly. I mean, it's amazing how quickly and how fast this can actually go through a flock. So, I think this is the dilemma. If you are an egg producer, you know, you're trying to come up with all types of biosecurity measures. So, you know, there's no way that your chickens can get impacted by the flu, but it is extremely difficult, you know, just because of all the wild birds.
All right, let me pick it up. We come back. We're talking to our friend Patrick Penfield, a professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. We're also going to talk about the price chain as it relates to food supply chains and food chains, and the grocery prices that we pay, and how quickly something can come down because of inflation, the farmer has to pay more to either feed the flock and raise the flock and then produce it, if you want to use that phrase, or whether it's grow crops. Well, those prices are already baked in or cooked into that product or piece of meat, so I don't know how the prices can come down right away. 621 traffic now, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL. More with CBS News and Dave Cohen in about 4 minutes about that midair flight between a Black Hawk helicopter and an American Eagle flight. And now they're saying numerous news outlets reporting that there were some pretty elite American figure skaters and two Russian world champions supposed to be on that flight. Athletes, coaches, and family members returning home from the National Development Camp held in conjunction with the U.S. Figure Skating Championships that happened over the weekend. So we'll have more on that. Patrick Penfield's our guest professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. Patrick, somebody texted in. This is a great question. Do free-range chickens increase the chance of avian flu? And how do these birds get the avian flu, and how do you prevent it?
Yeah, excellent question by our listener, Tommy. Absolutely. So, yeah, when you have free-range chickens, they're more susceptible to being in contact with wild birds.
So this and could be a self-inflicted wound where regulations require in states free-range chickens, which increase, or am I jumping to conclusions here?
No, Tommy, you're absolutely correct. Yeah, this is the dilemma. So, unfortunately, when you have this cage-free laws that are in place, it does, you know, lead the hens to being more susceptible to bird flu. So, you know, the key thing is again, you have to, if you're in that type of state where you have a cage-free type of laws, you have to make sure you have really good biosecurity measures in place where, you know, you're getting rid of puddles, you're, you know, protecting the birds from other wild birds. I mean, it's pretty significant and very costly.
How does this spread, this bird flu, Patrick?
You know, it's just through the air. And so, unfortunately, it can be through the air. It can be through water. It can be through, you know, feces. It's pretty, you know, again, very transmissible.
I remember Garland Robinette, guy worked here 12, 15 years ago, was talking about bird flu then. And he was talking about it eventually jumping to humans. That was a long, long time ago. But if you were to plot this on a graph or on a chart, would you see it increasing? Is this becoming more and more of a problem, at least for the avian population?
Yeah, absolutely. So the problem also is that the virus is mutating. And so, you know, with chickens, they can't actually get any immunity towards it. Maybe over time, maybe, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But again, if the virus keeps mutating, you're not going to have, you know, that resistance to that particular form of virus.
So 100 million hens have been killed so far, right? Had to have been destroyed so far?
Yeah, absolutely. 147 million, Tommy.
So somebody's going to have to pay for that, and that never goes away, the increase in that. I mean, do farmers ever recover those costs, or if you call it a chicken farmer, I guess, right? A rancher?
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah, so you're right, Tommy. This is the dilemma, right? So think about this. You are going ahead and you're growing these hens. And again, it takes 5 to 6 months before they can actually start laying an egg. And they only lay one egg per day. So again, if your whole flock is decimated and, you know, they haven't even laid an egg, you know, you're out at least 5 to 6 months worth of cost. So yeah, terrific if you're, an egg farmer.
We got a minute left, if we can, Patrick. Talk about grocery prices and the likelihood of them coming down, because I talked about before the break costs being already cooked into what's in the grocery store. Not literally cooked, but you know what I'm saying. Just the likelihood that grocery prices will ever come down substantially at all.
Yeah, you know, Tommy, the United States is the greatest country from a food production standpoint. So, you know, we do a fantastic job efficiency and a productivity standpoint. That being said, Tommy, the big issue is wages are going up. Fuel prices have gone up. They're kind of coming down a little bit, fuel prices. It's the cost of materials overall. So, yeah, I don't see that happening in the near future. I think, you know, it may not be a huge increase, but, you know, it'll continue its trend right now, 2-3%. And then certain foods will go up more, like eggs.
This is not a political conversation or question. It's a logistical question. Will a mass deportation have any effect on food prices or not?
Yes, absolutely. So you need people to, you know, pick the goods or the fruits, the vegetables. So, yeah, that absolutely could impact farmers because they're going to have to hire other people if they can't find labor. And so, unfortunately, wages will go up and that will, you know, increase the cost of food.
Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate your time. Info as always, Patrick Penfield, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. That's a tongue twister. More with Mike Strain when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 6:45, quarter till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWR, rolling convoys south on the causeway. Due to the fog, one lane open north, going at 35 miles an hour. Thursday morning, that means we talked to Mike Strain, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How you doing, Mike?
Man, I am doing great. I crossed that causeway yesterday going to Gallier Hall for a pest control meeting, and we had the convoy across it. You know, and it, when you got out in the middle there, it was quite foggy, but we made it. Everybody, you know, did what they needed to do, and we got across there safe and sound. But now is the time when you see that fog, and then out here in the as we call it in the Flatwoods, you got to be very careful on these highways. You'll hit that fog.
Do what you need to do and do what you're supposed to do while you're driving and pay attention. I'm not trying to preach. I'm just trying to use common sense stuff here and put the phone down, right? I know Carl.
Put the phone down, both hands on the steering wheel, pay attention who's in front, who's in back. Go slow. I mean, we 27 miles an hour. That's what they set it on yesterday. And you can get across. But I can tell you, I've had it clear as the bell on both ends of the causeway and get out in the middle. and you can't see the hood of the truck. You know, I've been there before, and that's when that convoy and everybody slows down. You got to be very, very, very careful. Again, but we've seen some major accidents on the highways in the last few days, mm-hmm. especially at night. And even when the weather's not bad, people need to slow it down. Because on the interstates, I've seen people traveling at extremely yeah. excessive speeds. You know, and they've got to be running 90 or 100 miles an hour out there. And on an average day, I'll see 2 to 3 accidents per day, you know, in my travels. And people, we just got to slow it down.
And even if you're doing the speed limit, if you're on the phone, I mean, what we're asking you to do, just think about it for a second. Is just pay attention and drive the vehicle and stay off of the computer. And I hate calling it a phone because it's not. People are not talking on the phone. Yeah. Basically, they're typing on the computer while they're trying to drive a vehicle. That's what they're doing.
That's right.
Don't do it.
And law enforcement can tell, because what you'll see is that the vehicle accelerate and decelerate. Mm-hmm. And you'll see it doing that rocking, and then you'll see the driver with their head tilted down. Because
yep.
one of the other things people are doing, they put that phone or computer, whatever you want to call it, below the eye level where you can't mm-hmm. see it through the glass, so it's down low. So they got to look down, and then when they look up, well, guess what? It's too late.
Yep, makes it even worse.
They're already in trouble.
Having to look
That's
down,
right.
and the law was for the right reason. Let's talk about, I saw a story yesterday about Plaquemines Parish and citrus, as we talk about after effects of the snow, and let's talk about that and other crops, Mike, and things that were affected by last week's weather.
So we're getting the reports come in from the Ag Center, and by and large, because of the snow, I think we got off pretty darn lucky. We're going to lose some fruit. You know, and the thing about, but we're not going to lose the trees. That's the important part. You know, with our citrus farms, you know, the trees, and I think we're going to be just fine. We got reports coming out today that from the LSU Ag Center, several reports about strawberries. A lot of the farmers lost a lot of the current crop on the plant, but not the plant. So the berries and the blooms that were on the vines, those were lost. However, that's about a 2-week delay in, you know, in the harvesting of the strawberries. So that is good. And then on crawfish, again, about a 7 to 10 day delay in their growth, but they're coming. And so by and large, I think we did very well. We're going to have some isolated incidents where for particular reasons you have loss, you know, of the whole crop and loss of the plants. But I think we're fortunate because again, the snow helped protect it. Even though we did have some record cold. Now, in some areas, it did get down to 9 degrees. And now, in that particular case, you could lose the plant itself. And so here on the North Shore, with some other areas, we may have lost some of those citrus plants. But, you know, in Plaquemines, you know, we'll see. You know, we'll know better in a couple of weeks when if they start greening up. But hopefully we haven't lost many of the trees themselves. And the thing about a citrus plant, if the plant dies, but you can't just cut it off to the ground and get regrowth, because the plant in the ground is not the plant. Because remember, those are grafted trees. So that budstock does not make good citrus fruit. You know, that's budstock. Mm-hmm. And from there, you know, all citrus trees are grafted. And that's why we have these superior citrus plants.
Mike, let me take a break for traffic, and when we come back, I want to talk about egg prices, because we started the morning talking about that. We can talk about more, if you will, about bird flu, also about record high prices for beef and what's going on with that, and grocery prices in general, because I don't see anything coming down, really. Maybe the increase might be halted, but I don't know how the prices that we see in the store are ever going to come down. Maybe I'm wrong. You can tell me when we come back. 6:50, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. Mike Strain's our guest, 6:55. He's the Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Mike, we were talking earlier with a supply chain expert about avian flu, and I think 147 million hens have had to be destroyed because of it. The problem that requiring the hens to be free range, plays in the spread of avian flu. How concerned are you about this nationwide, not just with eggs, but poultry and price of groceries, et cetera? Talk about that first, then we'll talk about the price of beef and the price of groceries in general.
So in the last 4 months, we've had a significant loss in hens. We've lost about 8% of all U.S. egg layers in the last 4 months. Now, that's significant no matter how you look at it. And so a predominant issue is avian influenza, high-path avian influenza. As you know, it is in multiple species. And so what happens to the high-path, and when we had the outbreak in the cattle in February that started off in three herds that were in the Texas Panhandle, right in that area, and now it's in more than 900 herds in 19 states and markedly affecting milk production. But then there was a connection between the dairy herds getting infected and subsequent local flocks of birds getting infected. And so what you see, and these record prices for eggs, the in around, $7 in this region, if you look at, small eggs, the medium eggs, like $6, extra large over $7, and then you add another $1, $1.50 on top of that to California eggs, and 60% of all the losses from the bird flu in hens has been in cage-free. So what happens in the cage-free scenario and how these hens can get affected, one is that you'll have a sick bird, a sick duck or sick goose, land in the field with these free-range chickens and contaminate the fields, and then it comes in and it literally wipes out the whole house. The death loss is extraordinary, and it's very, very rapid. One thing that we do know that if it gets into a flock of birds, and when you're talking about these houses that have 30,000 birds in them, if it gets in there, if we don't contain it in that, then a few days that virus can move 8 to 10 miles in the air just from the ventilation fans of that farm to the next farm. But normally, what we see within 48, maybe 72 hours, all the birds will die in that. And so, normally when once they start dying, then we go ahead and terminate the rest of them to control the disease. But then the big push is trying to keep her get from that farm to the next farm. This is so highly infectious. And you saw just recently now farms in Georgia that have become infected. And these are, our poultry farms. We have not had it in a commercial poultry farm in Louisiana. Biosecurity is the key, but what can happen is that, these infected ducks or infected geese, they can infect these poultry houses, but the other way is by, just contamination of people, clothing, truck tires. It's just an extraordinarily infectious disease. You think about that ducks or geese can land in a pond, on the farm when they take off, they shed the virus. The virus gets and goes through the cooling fans because you have to keep those running and infects the entire house. It's just so highly infectious. Now, what we've seen in the other species with the dairy, we think there was a single point mutation in the virus in the Texas Panhandle, and it got into these dairy farms, and it spread predominantly by the milk. But the other thing with this virus, it's a tricky one. The cattle will shed the virus in the milk for weeks, maybe even a month, before they become sick. And so that's another scenario we are dealing with. So the price of eggs, it will take some considerable period of time to try to build that back up. I think you will see eggs get back up once we reestablish the total number of chickens. Now, there are inflationary pressures, but the good news is, for the egg front, is that the price of grain has not risen. Corn and beans has not risen. Now, on the beef cattle, it hit record numbers this week simply because the beef cattle inventories are so low. We have less cows on the farm and less beef going into the feedlots. But that's a long discussion. Inflation has really hurt the beef farmer.
We'll talk about that next time, Mike.